You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello and welcome to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett, and we did not see Man United capitulate at Anfield like everybody in the world seemed to expect, including... I don't want to say including Virgil van Dijk, but he definitely, it was quite enjoyable hearing him say what he said after the game yesterday, Rob. But a good point for United.
A very good point for Manchester United. I said to you off camera, Scott, I don't think I've celebrated internally a 0-0 draw like that for many, many years. Because sometimes, Scott, you just got to go do the job. Go get the point, jump into the fire, jump into hell and get out somehow. And this was a game, Scott, where the script was written before, wasn't it? Everyone talking about the end of Ten Hag, the end of Manchester United as we know it, and a new project. And what did United do? They actually put in a shift and got a result. So well done to our lads, because it wasn't the greatest performance ever, but they did what they had to do.
It was an awful game, really. It was an awful game of football. But you take that. I think most teams in the Premier League would take a 0-0 at Liverpool. I think most of them would.
An awful game is better than getting hammered by 7.
Yes. Yes, it is. We definitely know how we feel about that. How did United do it? We'll talk about that throughout the show today. We'll discuss positives, potential negatives. We'll talk about the new star boy, Kobbie Manu, who is that's 3 games he's played now. I think he played at Everton, at Newcastle, and at Liverpool. 3 starts. And he looks tailor-made and ready for this, and the missing part of United's midfield. We'd like to see him play more often, but we'll see. Erik ten Hag's managing his minutes, but Erik ten Hag did manage to take a point from Anfield yesterday in a 0-0 draw. We'll be talking mainly about all of that today. Please get in touch with us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts as well, Apple, Google, Spotify, and the likes. And watch us on YouTube, The Promised Land and Man United Podcast. Like the video, leave a comment. Hit the notification bell as well so you never miss a show. And get in touch with us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC. Where do you want to start today, Rob? Because I think everybody in the world seemed to expect that United were going to lose that. I mean, I thought Liverpool were bad. Let's just say that. Liverpool were not at their very best, but I think United deserve a bit of credit for that as well. They got to a point where they seemed to run out of ideas, really. But everything was off. The quality was off. I jokingly tweeted at one point, Man United have found a way to play at Anfield, and that's dragging the opponent down to their level, which United in the first half, you look at McTominay and... He was captain for the day, but the way that the ball bounced off him when United are trying to progress the ball, you know, and he wasn't the only one either. But I think United probably could have had more chances than they had if their build-up and their quality on the ball had been better when they played it up the pitch. There was a moment where Diogo Dalot in the second half got a vertical pass off Onana and turned, accelerated, and drove past into the space in midfield. Had like three or four options, and he gave the ball away. And yeah. I'm like, come on, man. We'll talk about Dallow's red card as well at some point. Where do you want to start, Rob?
We'll start at the beginning, I think, with the team selection. You saw that the manager decided to play Kobbie Manu. So I think that was a positive straight away when people saw the team sheet. Kind of got kind of feeling we need to see that more. Like, I'm not quite sure why the manager sees that as his best selection when he's going to Anfield and hasn't played it in other games. That's fair. You know, like we've said, why are you playing certain things when we know that Bruno Fernandes wasn't there yesterday? So he was forced to kind of put that midfield out and do it with that midfield. And as you said, Scott McTominay there on the ball and off the ball, pretty horrific, I would say. But I do think that United went there with the right mindset. So you were going there knowing it was going to be a bad day. You know, Liverpool are going to have lots of opportunities. So you have to not kill yourself, Scott. Don't kill yourself. Don't go there and give the opponent something easy. Because I think that's what we've seen with Man United consistently this year, is that United have consistently lost games, allowed opponents to hurt them by doing silly things. So I don't think that was their present yesterday. I think, you know, I think the midfield two playing in the 4-2-3-1 and the centre-backs all did their jobs and meshed quite nicely. And you got through the game, Scott. And do you know what? A 0-0 in that scenario is a great, great result. And I know people want to joke that, oh, you know, it's just a 0-0 draw at Anfield. This could have been so bad. And after the last few weeks, you know, it could have been the end of Erik ten Hag yesterday, couldn't it? If you'd lost badly yesterday, this morning, this show today would have been, will Erik ten Hag be sacked in the next day or two? I don't think we're doing that show today, are we?
You look at it, though, and I just think when you see the way that they did apply themselves yesterday, like, I do find the talk a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there's a stat floating around comparing Erik ten Hag's first, I think, 60, 70 games to Klopp's and Arteta's.
Mm.
It's better.
Yeah.
It's better. And the difference is, oh, well, Ten Hag spent a lot of money in this kind of thing. We know that's a problem. That's always been a problem anyway. And, you know, I feel like you kind of have to... There are glimpses for me. There are glimpses in certain moments where I feel like I'm starting to see things that Ten Hag wants to do. But you need to have the level of application that United put in at Anfield yesterday. Every single game. McTominay said it after the game. Every 3 days. Like, or it might be every 7 days now, because United are out of Europe. So, you know, after Christmas, so they have two games in January. If you can just get through these next two games, this period of games, you know, and stay in touch, I think the season becomes more, not more simple, but more manageable, given, like, the injury crisis. Like, United had 10 players out yesterday.
Yeah. First-teamers. 10 like, proper first-teamers.
Well, you say first teamers. I would look at, like, say, five or six of them and say I would call them starters. Mm. But then the other players that are missing are first substitutes.
Yeah.
So it is like they were really up against it yesterday. And I think the level of application they showed, which is something we always criticize them for, that they don't always show it. But when they do, it shows that they can do it. And I don't think we're at a time where the manager should be getting questioned. But unfortunately, it's United. You know, and yeah, obviously they're really far off the pace, this kind of thing. But there's so many circumstances outside of that.
Yeah.
You know, that I just think give the bloke time, give him time, and watch now. We'll turn around and lose 3-0 to West Ham next weekend, and we'll be right back in the same position. But anyway, that's how I feel.
But it's you're not wrong, though, mate, because I think the thing is, this is how it goes. And it's like, this is my theory on this team from top to bottom, is that they go to Anfield and they know, they understand the critical nature of it. So they put in a performance. But yet at home against Bournemouth, they go, oh, well, this is Bournemouth. We'll just do what we do. And it's like, yeah, what you do is not good enough. You know, you need to be more of a cohesive unit and work together. And I think that's what we saw at Anfield, is that they understood that there was pressure in the game. You understand that Liverpool can really hurt you. And yet Liverpool, with their 37 opportunities on goal, which sounds horrific. And I think
they're not opportunities, though, Rob. They're not really a lot ones. Of them speculative, you know,
and like, they're shots from like 30 yards. Like, you know, they're not then like the XG on the day was around 2.5, just below 2.5 for Liverpool. And that is the true story. That shows that Liverpool didn't really create a lot of killer chances in the game. Yes, they had more than enough chances to win it. Of course they did. But that was a success. That meant that you kind of blocked that middle part of the pitch off and you allowed Liverpool to go to the wings, to go wider. You stopped their midfield completely driving through you. You just highlighted there the low part in midfield. When Dalot did that spin, you're pleasantly surprised, aren't you? You're like, oh, that's what you'd like to see in that part of the park. But then he gives the ball away. So the first part worked.
I was saying to him, don't lose it, don't lose it. Not to him, but I was watching saying, don't lose it, don't lose it, don't lose it. And he lost it.
So it's like they're doing half the function every time. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a success, but then we give it away. Oh, we've broken down play, but then we've given the ball away. Oh, there's a counter press on. Oh, we've got a chance on goal, and then we missed the chance. So that's why I think Ten Hag does persist with the tactic, because he feels it's just going to click one day and we're going to beat teams. You know, that's what he's trying to facilitate. But I think, again, yesterday, you're managing fires. You just got to put that fire out and make sure you get the point. United did that. And I think it comes from that centre of the pitch. And I think Kobbie Mainoo, he has got to start games. Whatever people think about saving his legs as a youngster and all of this, you are now in a needs-must situation, because he is the best central midfielder at the football club. Been saying it for 6 months. Now we're at that point, Scott. I think you will lose games if Kobbie Mainoo doesn't start games.
Well, you look at next weekend, right? And you think West Ham away. But you look at the midfield that he's been picking this season, or more in recent weeks with Amrabat kind of fixing into that sixth spot. And then you have McTominay and Bruno Fernandes. And we did say before the game that I think you might see a more functional, better midfield without Bruno Fernandes in there. And that's not to criticize him too much or anything like that. But you know what you're getting with Bruno Fernandes, and that's a lot of running, a lot of mouthing, and a lot of 50-50s that are 50-50s, you know?
Yeah.
And the way that the midfield works, and we've said it a few times, I think you can only facilitate one of Fernandes or McTominay. You can't do both, because I think you kind of lose McTominay. Like, fair play to him, captain. I know you don't like this, Rob, but fair play to him for being captain. It's a big proud moment for him. But at the same time, you know that he ain't really contributing to your build-up and is often a passenger when out of possession as well. Saying that, he did make the chance for Højlund, that first pass before United's best chance of the game. But it's either McTominay or Fernandes for me. And I think you're looking at Kobbie now. He's starting to get some minutes. He's dealt with three probably of the toughest atmospheres in the Premier League in his first three starts. Not started at Old Trafford yet, right? I don't think.
No.
But he's passed those tests. He has. And I feel like what you see with him is calmness, the ability to think under pressure. It looks like he's got more time than he has. And he has an eye for a pass as well. And he passed in, he played that through ball for Garnacho. Like, maybe Bruno can do that as well. But for me, I'm just looking at this period now and Bruno's suspension's over. It's got to be Amrabat or Casemiro. Kobbie probably has to be in there. And then one of McTominay or Bruno Fernandes, you know? And I think that's a much better balance than what we've been seeing with the six and the 2-8s.
It's not rocket science. It really isn't rocket science. Like, what you've just said in the last 3 seconds there is exactly what everyone sees every week. So I think this is where, as much as we back Erik ten Hag and we say he needs time, that's cool, and we all agree with that, is that tactic is pretty simple and pretty obvious. So I think you saw it against Liverpool, is that McTominay played the 10, didn't he? So he's in that kind of floating role. He's neither striker nor midfielder. He's in the middle there. But you better be creative in there. So he makes that pass into Højlund, where obviously Højlund has his big opportunity and fires it, unfortunately, straight at the goalkeeper. But if you give the ball away 20 times for that one pass, Scott, it doesn't work. And unfortunately, that's the same with Bruno. Bruno can give you that pass that Kobbie did right through the middle, through the heart of the Liverpool team. But he can't do the other bits that Kobbie did. He can't hold on to the ball. He can't create that calmness. So that's the problem with Bruno playing the eight. So this is not about an 18-year-old versus a 29-year-old. This is purely about function and about what the player does. And I think that this is what we saw yesterday, was that midfield was just more functional, because it had to be. Because if you were dysfunctional yesterday, guess what? You're losing 3-0. Just, you don't even need to turn up. That's what's going to happen. So That is the choice for Erik ten Hag here, is that I would say at the moment, in ten Hag's head, Bruno and Scotty are your first two picks in the team almost. Like, they're the two players he wants to base the team around, these 2 8s. It hasn't worked this year at all, Scott. We've not seen anything that makes you go, actually, they combine well, or actually, that's really helping Hoyland, or actually, United are brilliant on the counter-press and our presses, but you're not seeing any of that. You're forced to do it sometimes, but you're not forced to do it every week. So this is the whole thing about Kobbie Manu now, I think has to be the starting midfielder. You've got to put him in there and build everything around him. And that does mean Amrabat then. So Amrabat made mistakes yesterday, but he at least allows Kobbie to go and be Kobbie, and you can go and be a proper midfield and work. So big decisions for Erik ten Hag, because I think if he just sticks by that function of Bruno and Scotty running your midfield, you will lose more games and you'll probably get sacked.
What do you think?
And that's the bottom line. I think it's as obvious as that, Scott. I really do. I think it's as obvious as that. Is if you want to keep doing the same thing that doesn't work, you will get punished for it eventually.
What do you make of Amrabat so far? Because I'm not convinced, I've got to say.
He's not getting bought, is he? Like, let's be honest, he's on loan. They're not going to buy him because they wanted to have a look at him over a period of time and see what his function is, how he can help you. I think Man United, when they look at the structure of this, they're not going to execute a deal for a player that is still very much on the fringe in terms of Erik ten Hag, isn't he? Like, I did the video before about the Amrabat solution, as I called it. And do you know what, Scott? I think if United played 4-2-3-1, then Amrabat, as it stands today, is part of the solution. You could play better football doing that. But this manager doesn't want to do that. He wants to play with a single pivot. Now, if Amrabat is your single pivot, you're going to have trouble. That's just the way it goes. But if you've got Manu next to him, I think it's a whole lot better. It's just more functional. Now, he's not the solution long term. He really, really isn't. And you can see that parts of the game, Scott, that go past him. Like, he cannot cope with the pace of midfield versus midfield. But he's better than most of them at it. He's better than Bruno running that running 6-8. He's better than Scott McTominay running the 6-8. He's better than Fred doing the 6-8, and Fred's gone. So this is the problem. It's like, I don't know if it's, do you keep Amrabat? It's what do you do in the windows to come to solve the midfield dilemma? Because that's the difference between Liverpool and, say, Man United, is that Liverpool went and solved their dilemmas, and even yesterday had midfield problems, but it's a work in progress. Whereas Man United, it is, again, just fighting fires. You're like, how do you stop hurting yourself through the centre of the park? And I think some of those solutions are really easy. It's up to the manager to pick the team to make sure you don't lose football matches.
Yeah, I think it's the profiling of the midfield. I understand that cash was tight in the summer at United, but you look at, well, Rob,
spent more cash than most.
Yeah, but you look at Declan Rice. How long are we talking about Declan Rice? You know, and if you want to play a single pivot, you need somebody who can actually do the single pivot. Don't do Casemiro, whose legs have gone. Don't do Amrabat, who's like not really that. He looks like he's running through treacle at times. You know,
I know.
Like, it's kind of sad, but he's filling a gap. But like you said, Rob,
curricle vehicle solution. Reversing. It feels like sometimes it's all very slow, and you can see the game's actually happening around him, and he's like, my body doesn't function at this pace. It was like Nemanja Matic in the last couple of years.
It's a really good comparison. The Matic thing is a really good comparison. Yeah,
intelligent footballers who can do certain things. But if you ask them to do stuff that they're not so good at, they might get exposed. And it kind of is the same question what we're saying about Bruno Fernandes. Like, if you want him deeper playing the 6-8, you're going to get hurt. You're going to hurt yourself. And then at the end of the game, you're probably going to say, well, why did you do that? So, you know, I don't know if I'm right. I feel sorry for him in a way, Scott, because I don't think he's had a fair crack of the whip. And he's been trying to get his fitness back, and he's admitted that. I think you did see yesterday that it's about pairings in football. Centre-back pairings, midfield pairings, full-back pairings, forward pairings. And that's how you beat teams. You know, if you get those pairings right, you are a better unit. And I just think United were better yesterday in a lot of their work than some of the work we've seen this season, which has just looked crazy at times.
Just to stick on the midfield for a second, I mean, we talked about Amrabat there. Will they trigger the option? I doubt it. Like, Ineos coming in, looking at that, I doubt it. And then you've got Casemiro, who's probably in his last He's going to leave by the summer. That's pretty much a guarantee. Christian Eriksen, you probably think, unless he gets a renewed deal, he's definitely the most he's going to be next season if he stays as a rotation option. The absolute most.
Yeah.
So then you're looking at potentially three midfielders you might have to replace in the summer. Mm. I haven't even counted McTominay there. Like, we all know that these players have a time limit on their time at Old Trafford. So this is a potential to remodel the midfield that you have. And if you buy somebody that's technically proficient, tall and physical enough with a good engine, these players go for expensive money, but you can look across other leagues in Europe and probably find a bargain or two. And if you just fill your team up with more players who can think under pressure, pass the ball, be composed, you've already got one in Kobe, you know? If you can find somebody more naturally defensive who can sit in that protection role in the box, play Kobe around him, and then that midfield can facilitate somebody like Bruno Fernandes a lot more. But you need to fill your squad with more options that are capable of doing everything. And there's loads of them around. There are.
There's a whole like 6 to 7 billion human beings on the planet telling me you can't find one or two for your midfield. Like, they do exist, like you're just saying there, Scott. And you just said about facilitating. I do think that Erik ten Hag with players, say, like, I think Bruno, let's take him as the example, is that if you were just to make your team about Bruno being the 10 and then finding midfielders that complemented him, I think you're okay. I think Bruno then shines as the 10. We know that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that when Bruno was just being a 10 or tasked to maybe start the press to run with the centre forward. So yesterday we saw United kind of go to a 4-2-4 shape at times. And you saw kind of almost like two centre forwards, but it wasn't really. It was just in the press or in the setup. That Bruno can absolutely do that. Go let Bruno do that at the top of the pitch. But you then have to go and look after the other bits behind him. I do think with Erik ten Hag, I don't think he fancies Bruno as a 10. Like, I've seen so many games where I've gone to Old Trafford, Scott, and gone, he has to start Bruno as a 10 today. There's no chance. This game has to have Bruno as the 10, and Bruno starts as the 8, or Bruno starts wide right, or Bruno does something else. So I kind of feel sympathy for the captain. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm sure he'd rather just be the 10. But I don't think the manager fancies him there because he doesn't do it enough when he's got the opportunity. So I just said they're buying a new midfield. Chelsea went and spent $222 million on two number sixes. Yeah. And it still doesn't work because it takes ages to make it work. But you've got to go buy the players first. It is not going to work with Scott McTominay. It probably isn't going to work with Sofyan Amrabat. It will work with Kobbie Mainoo. You get Mainoo in there and play him and buy players to complement the bits that do work for you. That ball, Scott, that you saw there and you said about going into Garnacho, Manu's got that in spades. Man United fans might not have seen it, but that's what he does. He can pick the ball up in the number eight position, and his vision is as good as Bruno Fernandes in that position. It's just that he's not known for it. He can do that ball all day, every week. And when he's an England footballer one day, Scott, he's going to be playing that ball through to Jude Bellingham running through the 10. And everyone's going to go, wow, that's world class. That's to come. That's a spoiler. So I think United need to get on that now. We need to start doing that a lot more now. And this manager needs to push that agenda more than he has done.
You mentioned Chelsea. We will move back to the game in a minute. You mentioned Chelsea's midfield there. Chelsea spent all that money, 220 odd million, on two players that moved for a combined total of about less than 15 million about 18 months before.
Exactly.
So those players are out. They're making those. Like, they're in production. You just have to find them. And if you find them before they're ready, fine. I'm happy to sit there as long as they've got the fundamentals. Like, and you kind of bring them in and you treat them, bring them in the team, bring them out of the team, and you mix the minutes with some more experienced players in order to down the line get to a point where they are your established first teamers. I'm more than happy with that. But yeah, let's go back to the game. We talked about the midfield. Shout out the defense, perhaps. Rafa Varane, player of the match. Really weird. But Rob, I know that I've sat here and I've tried to defend Ten Hag on this. But mate, I'm sorry. This is just weird. Like,
it's indefensible.
I don't understand, Eric. Like, unless you've fallen out with him, and you might have, fair enough. And maybe Varane is another player that's going to leave at some point. And this, you look at this team now, I've started talking about a few players. Johnny Evans, the two centre-backs, you don't think they'll be there this time next season.
No.
Either. You know? How many players am I talking about here that aren't going to be here within the next 6 to 12 months. But anyway, Rafa Varane playing left centre back, was he?
Yes. In the Salah channel, the danger channel.
It's just weird, Rob. Like, what's happened there? Like, I don't... Eric, you have to... Eric Ten Hag has to take some criticism for this one, because I don't get it. His explanation was that I don't like playing him in the left centre-back role because it doesn't help us. Not for me.
This all comes down to man management, Scott. So I think we do know that Varane's fallen out with Ten Hag. We know this from weeks gone by. And for me, this is why Ten Hag does choose certain players and not others. I think if you assimilate and agree with the manager and agree with what Ten Hag wants, great. I think he gives you an opportunity to either succeed or fail. I think if you don't like what the manager...
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Wants you to do for whatever reason, or you don't like... You don't have that personability with the manager, I think he bins you pretty quickly. So this is why I think, even though I'm not comparing the two situations with Jadon Sancho, but because Jadon Sancho won't do what Ten Hag wants, off you go, mate. And I think it's the same with Varane. All these weeks, Scott, he should have been playing Rafa Varane. It doesn't matter whether you think he can play left centre-back. He's better than everything else you've got there to play in that role. So do it. And I think with Harry Maguire, I think it was like that last year. He didn't want to play Harry Maguire, and he didn't. And I think the start of this season, he didn't want to play Harry Maguire. And he got to a point where you were forced to play him, and Maguire then plays his way into the team, doesn't he, and earns his spot. But I think that's been the story the 18 months with Ten Hag. So I do think there is some criticism there towards the coach, because I think you have to be able to bite your own lip and do things that you don't want to do to stop yourself losing games. I'm not quite sure Eric's the best at that. I'm not sure Eric is the best at looking at a game and thinking, well, today isn't risk and reward day, lads. Today is about shut it down, play calmer, and play within yourselves. Does Ten Hag ever really do that? So, like you just said there, Evans and Varane, they're not going to be at the club next summer. So you just said there about buying a whole new midfield. Might be buying a whole new centre-backs here at the moment. Will Harry Maguire...
Not talked about Harry Maguire. You know,
Maguire won't probably be at the club. You're probably going to sell Maguire. Though the irony of all of this big round of the last 6 months is he might end up getting a new contract and be captain again. Like, that would be strange, wouldn't it? But...
No, but that, like, could happen. Think of this conversation we're having now, and think of the expectations that he's battling against.
Totally.
You know? So he's having to challenge for where do people put United this season, at least in the top four, with a group of players really that he's using at the moment that are not going to be here in 6 months.
Yeah. But he has to manage those situations.
The core of the team. I will say this, by the way. maximum, hopefully, of four league games before Lisandro Martinez is back.
Yes,
huge. United play three games before the end of the year, and then one Premier League match. One Premier League match in January. What the hell are we going to do on the podcast? But, you know, maybe some players will be leaving. Maybe some players will be brought in. But, yeah, Martinez is back on the pitch, isn't he? So I think we're talking about this left centre-back problem position. As long as he's fit, he's a starter every single match, as we've seen already. And but he helps a lot of your build-up as well.
You found a solution yesterday to that. And you have found solutions to this left centre-back problem that I think has become a problem, unfortunately, because of the manager. I think the manager hasn't picked his best defence week to week to week because he sees the game differently. Now, I'm not saying we know better than him, but when we see what we saw yesterday with Varane, let's never say ever again that Rafa Varane, who's won a billion Champions Leagues and played in all sorts of defences, can't play the left side of the centre-back. Of course he can. He can play there, but you have to choose that and you have to start with that. And if you want to start Luke Shaw there or you want to start Lindelof there, but then your whole defence collapses in game, Scott, I think this is why Harry Maguire looks so good on the pitch, because Harry Maguire is the one doing his job, but other players haven't been able to do that job. So these decisions. You live and die by them. You know, he picks the team and it's not perfect. You've had all these injuries, but I don't think he's really flexed his muscle in some of the positions that he could have done as a coach.
I think they've had 9 different centre-back pairings this season.
It's mad.
9.
Have we got 9 centre-backs at the club? I don't even know. We haven't even got that many, have we?
It's mad. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah. And that's enforced and some of it isn't. I've watched games this season and gone, why don't you just do the simple thing there? Play Varane and Maguire and get on with it. Like, you don't have to tweak everything every week, because that's a manager's choice, isn't it? 9 centre-back pairings could have actually been 6, Scott. The truth. You could have stuck with some of those things. So it's up to Eric to pick the team. But I think this is why people have criticised him as well, is that some of the coaching decisions haven't been brilliant.
Right. So the centre-backs played well. Johnny Evans, big shout-out to him as well.
Yep.
36 years old, however old he is, and still doing it. Yep. I mean, it was a good defensive performance. What did you make of... should we do the red card? Do you want to come back to that right at the end?
I just do a bit of Evans, actually. I don't know if you saw one bit with Johnny Evans where, when the game stopped and broke down because of an injury, how he walked out of the defence and went to Cobby and had a really good chat with him. I don't know if you saw that on camera.
No.
He went up to him and he was like, right, mate, you do this. I'm here. And you could see him coaching Cobby like a captain, like going, that was leadership. And you don't want Johnny Evans in your defence, Scott, being completely honest. Not starting games at Anfield. He's too old and he's a cover player. But that is what you want from your centre-back, to go to the young lad and say, right, you're doing well, mate, but do this, screen me here, look after this here, I'll get the ball to you, we'll get the ball out, play out from the back, which was disastrous at times yesterday. But that's what you want from centre-backs, isn't it?
No, I'm going to put you up there. I don't think playing out from the back was actually the problem. I think playing through the middle was the problem.
It's the midfield. Yeah, it's from defence to midfield. Like, I'm still a little bit concerned about Onana's perchance to clip the ball to the wing every time he's got the ball. But I kind of think he hasn't got the ball in midfield, has he?
He got a lot of stick for that yesterday. He got a lot of stick on commentary for that yesterday.
Yeah.
That was the option that they picked.
Yeah.
A lot of occasions, it was tight to the touchline, but there were players taking that under control and losing it.
Yes.
I know he kicked a couple out. There was like a period in the game where he kicked out 2 or 3 in a row within a few minutes, and then Carragher and Neville were like, well, what's he doing? I thought his distribution was pretty good overall yesterday.
I think his distribution as a body of work over the season hasn't been good enough for me.
I agree with that.
And I think that's what the kind of numbers reflect. But I do think that when he's got the ball on the edge of his box, or he's just on the edge of his box, he's around that area, that United need to come up with a system to be able to give him an out ball, and they haven't yet. So here he is, been at the club now months and months and months, and United still haven't worked out how to do that. And I find that's more shocking to me in coaching terms, because you just need to be able to make sure that two of your midfielders move and spread the play and open the play up so there's a pass on for this goalkeeper that can clearly pass the ball. Like, he is head and shoulders above David De Gea. But do you know what? De Gea used to do that ball as well, Scott, because there was nothing on. De Gea used to clip that ball to the right wing, to the left wing, and it would go over someone's head, and we'd all say, oh, it's because David De Gea can't pass a football. well, Onana can pass a football. So what is wrong here? Why is he clipping it too far? Why is he clipping it like that? Because that ball should be on the deck. It should be played to someone's feet. You just said there about Dalot. When Dalot got the ball inverting in the middle, two or three times he turned. But then as you got into midfield, it all kind of collapsed. And that's what we see every week at Man United is when the ball's in midfield, they can't make it stick and they can't play through anyone at all. It wasn't really the problem yesterday, but it was still shocking, I think, when it happens and you see United lose the ball in those areas because it scares you on the counter press.
I think there was a period in the game, and I could be wrong here, but there was a period in the game where Onana was clipping those balls wide and it was not really coming back. Like Liverpool changed their tactics and maybe this helped a little bit because they went more 4-2-4, didn't they? But he was clipping them wide and then some space seemed to open up when he had the ball in the middle, you know? And then he mixed it up a bit. Then you see that he can clip one out wide to Antony. And he like that's a direct pass. So you don't see enough of. And Antony carries it towards the edge of the box and United have half a chance.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's going to... This kind of thing, like, and even with Højlund and this kind of thing, what you're looking at is a team that doesn't know how to bloody progress a ball. They can't... Rasmus Højlund's received the fewest passes in the league for a striker.
Yeah. Like,
and Martial is second bottom on that list. That was floating around before the game. This is just a team that doesn't have a clue.
Yeah.
So Ten Hag is trying to have to coach them in real time. And I would make the same case. They don't pass to the striker. They also don't know how to receive it off a goalkeeper.
Mm.
So that's why you're not seeing the best of Onana. But I think, to me, I thought his distribution was okay yesterday. That's not something I pull him up on. Some hairy moments in terms of, like, I think there was one he tried to come out and catch a ball and dropped it in the first half. Yes. But I do respect, as much criticism as Onana's getting, I do respect the fact that he is willing to be big enough to come up and say, I'm here, I'm ready to take it. And he said, there was a quote that floated around after the game. He said, of Anfield's atmosphere, I felt nothing. I'm sure that they will try and make him feel something the next time he goes there.
Yeah.
But fair play.
Look, he's a goalkeeper that's been playing in the San Siro for the last year or so. He absolutely knows what big crowd atmospheres are. And I think that's one of the reasons why you bought him, Scott, was for his personality. Is that, you know, I've read a quote this morning, actually, just before we went live, that he said, don't get too high, don't get too low.
Yes, I know. I was going to bring that up, actually.
Where have I heard that from before? So, you know, trademark, et cetera, et cetera.
That was his social media post, I think.
Oh, was it? Right, okay.
Don't get too high, don't get too low.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad, because do you know what? That is exactly what your goalkeeper should be. He should be like that. It's like, if you have a good performance, you don't pat yourself on the back. You just get on with it. And I do think he said last week in an interview, I think it was Manchester Evening News, and said, you know, I'm not happy at Man United. And he meant he's not happy with his performances. So I'm good with that. He's not blinded to the fact that he needs to be better, but everyone else needs to be better. And that's what he's trying to get across. So, look, if Man United could improve that function of goalkeeper to midfield, but then midfield to the forward line, you sort out 95% of your problems. Like, if you can do some of just the fundamentals in the centre of the park and move the ball on, this all gets solved pretty quickly. So I think this is the challenge to Erik ten Hag, because if Erik ten Hag stays at Man United, he has to make these functions work somehow. I don't know how. New players, I think, are the answer. But you can't then just go, oh, well, Onana doesn't save the ball like how we want, so let's get rid of the goalkeeper now and get another goalkeeper. You have to make it work with other players, don't you? So I think that's that when you see United go out from the back, it's all like good intentions, isn't it? Like, you know, they want to do it. It's just that they can't do it. You have to find solutions for that. Otherwise, you just can't do it. You said there about the ball from Onana to Antony. That was on all day yesterday. And Antony was willing. Antony was like, hit it over the top. I'm going to run. Watch me go. And the one or two times United did it, Liverpool's whole defence broke apart into pieces. Mm-hmm. They could have done that the whole game, Scott. They could have done it another five or six times and you would have been fine. You could have had Rashford on in those channels and just gone, Rashi, you stand there and we're just going to clip it over and you're going to run in straight
line. Would you have started Rashford on the right? And I know that Ten Hag said that he was ill and he still had that hangover from being ill. I thought that's the way I thought he would go. But obviously, if he's not fit enough to do it. And I think people overlook, though, and like he gets a lot of stick and fair play. Antony's defensive mind, I think that's why he stayed on, you know.
that's why you play him. Like, you play him because he's literally the only person that bothers pressing on that side. So, and I think the difficult thing is that all these United players are doing multiple jobs when maybe you'd want them just to do one or two things better. So you'd like Antony to be more creative, wouldn't you? But there's a lot of weight on him to kind of control the whole press on that side because he's the only one who really goes and triggers. You just said about Marcus Rashford has been ill. That's been the line coming out of Manchester United for the last week or two. But this is Liverpool. Marcus Rashford's one of your best players. If Marcus has got a cold or is not well, has got a virus, generally players do play. So I think the truth is, Scott, he's not playing because of his form. That's it. I think when Marcus came on, there were still things that weren't right. He came on and just didn't look right to me. Just not doing the right action, not looking after the space like he should, not even being on the front foot. There was one bit, you know, where he gets the ball across and United should score. It's a kind of tapping, isn't it? I think Hannibal runs across the front post. One of them should get a touch on it. That's what Marcus can give you in that kind of moment. But it's the other moments. It's where he loses the ball. It's where he wants to just stand on the touchline with the ball at his feet and the game then slows down. We shouldn't really be talking about that with a £350,000 a week footballer. We shouldn't. And he needs to be better. And I think that's why he sat on the bench. And I'm fine with that. If Ten Hag's looking at that in training and going, you're not doing it for me, lad, so you're on the bench, I'm fine with that, because I think that's the kind of hard decisions that a manager needs to make.
Just to revert back, Andre Onana's post was in credit. He didn't credit you, Rob.
I'm gutted.
Never too high, never too low. Only positive thinking, thanks to the away fans today.
We need a T-shirt with it on.
Right, let's...
Red card.
Do you want to do anything else before the red?
Not really. Like, I don't think there was a lot of depth to the performance of Man United, but there was enough that you saw there that maybe they should go into games this season for the rest of the season trying not to lose. Maybe start there with that.
If you build on, and that's something that they did quite well last season.
Yeah.
Focus on keeping clean sheets to start with and then build on it. And I think what we went back to yesterday was a desire to keep a clean sheet, people working for each other, sticking to the plan. And they had their moments where if they could have used the ball a bit better, maybe they would have had more chances than they did have. But that's a foundation to build off. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure we'll be having similar conversations to what we've had in previous weeks after the West Ham game.
I think West Ham will be a tougher game now. I really do.
Yeah, potentially. But anyway, right. So United got their point, but they finished a man light because Diogo Dalot won a throw in. And then was a bit frustrated 94 minutes into the game that he didn't get a decision that he wanted and was booked twice for the same thing within 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we criticised Dalot, but come on. Like, I don't know where to start with this.
I think it's gross incompetence from Michael Oliver, right? Because this, again, is about the PGMOL and their ridiculous, stupid directives that change every few weeks. So this year, the line from them is, we are clamping down on dissent. So if you do the same line of dissent within 3 seconds, but you see two actions, so that's two yellow cards, is it? No, it isn't. That's ridiculous. So absolutely, the first one is a yellow card. The sad thing is that Dalot's absolutely right. Salah kicks the ball out. So that's what he's protesting about, is the 91st minute at Anfield. You're in a cauldron and you're expecting players to not show any emotion at any point or any time. So a yellow card there would have been suitable. Oliver could have gone over and said, hang on, lad, calm it down. It's the end of the game and I'm here as your referee to manage this. But what did he do? He went to steal the headline. So I think this is the problem with some of English referees. We see it a lot, Scott, is that you see referees making these, what I would call knee-jerk decisions. He gives the yellow card and you do see Dalot turn around and kind of throw his arms up, but he doesn't go to the referee, doesn't get in his face.
He's frustrated.
Like, he's frustrated because he's right. Like he's right. Like Salah's kicked the ball out of play and a billion fans around the world who's watching the game can see that Salah just kicked the ball out of play. It's up to the referee then to use discretion and say, right, yellow card, end of the game, shut your gob, don't be giving me any more because I will send you off. But he literally did it within 2 seconds. And in fact, it was so quick, he couldn't even get the second yellow out. It's like one yellow, I have to put it away now. Now second yellow. And everyone's like, this is a joke, isn't it? So I think it was terrible. I think when you also look at the passage of plays in the game, mate, you look at Darwin Núñez earlier on, who gets a yellow card, turns to the referee, claps him in his face afterwards, does the old, you should have put the other player. Well, that's three yellow cards then? Like, he didn't give him one yellow card.
I mean, if you're going to give the red card to Dallo,
you're sending everyone off.
You're sending everyone off, A.
Brutus Magnus gets six yellow cards a week. Also,
like you just said there, Darwin Núñez. Yeah. Three yellow. If you're judging it by that metric of how he sent off Dallo, that's three yellow cards for Darwin Núñez in a minute. So he was not looking at the ball. He absolutely boshed Johnny Evans in the chest, like really quite hurt him. I think that would hurt quite a lot of people. Then he starts. He kicks the ball away. After the whistle goes,
shoots. But that's all right. Supposedly,
that's fine. And then applauds the decision for getting a yellow card.
There were three or four times or so I saw Liverpool players with acts of dissent in the game because they were getting frustrated and the referee didn't get his card out. So I think this is all about consistency again. We also talk about like VAR's involvement and I think how that's changed the game or how the reason why we have VAR, and it's because we can't always trust the on-field referee to see everything. But then you're kind of making extra decisions, aren't you? So it was only just to kind of digress there. There was the West Ham game yesterday, wasn't there? Where Soufal goes into the player with his arm raised into the player's jaw as he runs towards him. VAR doesn't see that. VAR has a conversation with the referee and no action is taken. It's a yellow card. So it's weird, Scott, because the whole idea about tech is that it's supposed to make decisions better. Now, I think yesterday you send a player off like that. I know VAR can't get involved with two yellow cards. Maybe we have to tweak that and say, well, hang on. Is there a clear and obvious error there? Because I think there is. I don't think that that's two acts of dissent because he turns around and goes, oh, and then gets back in position. Dallo was back in his position. He wasn't like running towards the referee where that would have made it a little bit more obvious. So I think we see it with Michael Oliver a lot. He's supposed to be our top referee, but I see a lot of the grandstanding from him that every week in matches where a little bit too big for his boots. Don't want to kind of put it like that, but he does do that with his refereeing. He tries to be forthright rather than accurate.
That's another player that is now absent.
I know. And you can't appeal it because it's two yellow cards. So it's stupid. So like if he'd given him a red card for two acts, say he'd given it for the whole thing and said, yeah, straight red card because I didn't like your reaction, United could appeal it and it gets turned over. But you can't, the two yellow cards. So all these little technicalities you see in football are just rubbish. It's stupid. You can change them. And I think that the referee there in that moment, why did he feel that that's what the game needed? Like it really wasn't, was it? No. And imagine if Liverpool scored off the back of that in that two or three minutes afterwards, you know, there would have been hell to pay, but no one would have given Man United sympathy because we don't get sympathy for those types of things, do we?
Anyway, frustrating, but you know, overall, I think it's a hard fought point. Liverpool were not their best. United weren't either, but at least they showed some kind of application that means that I think they deserved a point in the end. I'll go that far. I think they deserve some. They deserve to take something from the game for me.
They did.
As much as you will see now in the next few days, criticism of, oh, wow, you're celebrating a 0-0. Well, I don't think people are, really. It's just, you know, seeing some kind of metal.
I think Roy Keane said it, of all people, after the game. He said it. He went, in the history of time, sometimes you have to go places and shut the door and get nil-nils and get out of there. And that's from Roy Keane, who was always demanding the standard. So I'm cool with that because that's how we were saying, I think, before as well, Scott. We were going, we need to see United at least kind of, you know, shut the door and stop Liverpool at source at times. And I think they did that successfully. And I think they did deserve their point. 0-0 draw at Anfield in the circumstances. Again, it's all about context. I think it's a brilliant result.
Let us know what you think. Get in touch with us in the comment section or on social media @_Scott_Saunders, @_Rob_B, although Rob might reply to you in 2024, at TPLMUFC as well. Any final thoughts, Rob, before we shoot off?
No, just very sad for Virgil van Dijk, you know, boo-hoo-hoo. You know, oh, you know, only one team wanted to win it. And one team was, I think his words were buzzing.
I hate that. Honestly,
They were buzzing. And again, Keno, just to mention him again, was absolutely right. It's arrogance. And that was my one thing before the match as well. I thought, I really hope Liverpool just think they're going to turn up and score seven again, because that gives us the best chance of getting a result. That's exactly what happened. I think Liverpool were arrogant in a lot of their play yesterday. And it comes from your centre-back there. Like, I think afterwards, yeah, you can be disappointed, but Jurgen Klopp turned it on his players. Jurgen Klopp afterwards and said, "When you know, we have all these chances, 36 chances, didn't make loads of great chances, but we should win this game." And that's all you need to take away. So Virgil van Dijk should be saying that about his own team and not worrying about Man United, because we got the point and got out of there. And you need to go and fix yourselves, because I still think Liverpool showed yesterday that they're not the finished deal at the moment.
Yeah, Liverpool play Arsenal next weekend. United go to West Ham. If they can show the same application levels and keep a clean sheet, just do a few different things a little bit better. We'll see. Bruno Fernandes will be back next week. So I'm sure you'll see McTominay, Amrabat and Fernandes in the midfield. And we'll be going back to the conversation we were having just about a week ago.
I think at 7 foot, but put a bet on it right now. Yeah, if I could do a bet online now, Kobbie Mainoo won't start. He won't
That's start. The top line is from this show, I think, that he should be. But anyway, we'll be back to preview that game and talk about whatever's been happening in the United sphere later this week. This is a post-match pod for the Liverpool game. And, you know, some positives, some things to build on. But like we say, have to do that every 3 days or now. Well, over the Christmas period, every 3 days. And then into 2024, every 7 days. Because United are out of a bunch of competitions. But anyway, subscribe wherever you get your pods and watch us on YouTube as well. The Promised Land and Man United podcast. Like this video, subscribe and leave a comment as well. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us, like I just said, at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_P, and at TPL MUFC. Until next time, Rob, we'll be back before Christmas, won't we?
We will be.
We will, and we'll probably be doing some stuff around Christmas as well, because there's a lot of games coming up for United. But until next time, everyone, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, if you have been watching. And we'll see you next time for another Promised Land podcast. Until then, see you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.